말 당도 세지 레신 봐. 안 세지기 되게 잡느냐. 시엔 되봐 있나? 신바 찍게. 아니. 신바 되네. 감숨기 콜위도 코와리아 신바지. 되네. 랑 제증에 삼바 랑들 신바지. 되네. 안 다도 신바 심템버 주바 집에 텐신지. 지나디 디시디 방고고래 사제. 대 디방고와 인자다 치데라 안 치디 점지 디기래 신비기 신바디 빠야래 양아서 님보로 가르콤고래 람나 안 치디기 안에 제게 댄저 밀리름 버체 된체 바다 안에 톱가와 안지라와 안에 치와 미다바 두 삼다 공고래 세지 기신 디슈 사제. 나디네 대 신바니 바 안에 Kamsumla, Shimbi, Shambati, Jaya, and the Yambokar Kumkuri Lamna, and Kuru Kamsum, yeah, Kuru Dungadi getting Kuris, Kuru Dungakum Kuris. Now Kuru Dungakum, not Delaya, and the Chigi Dunga, Samnam Manguore, Chisadine, Dangha Dina, Shadel, Dunga Sum, Dunga Dunga Sia, Samya, Ku Dunga Samya, and the Chabadu Dunga Samya, and the Dikor Samya. Nakuriki, Shirley Shimba Payala, and then you do have some more age,
Good morning. So, we've been looking at now for the last number of weeks at the text, the parting from the four kings. And these are the root verse is mentioned in the third verse of the commentary of Drukpa Gyaltsen that we're using. If you cling to this life, you are not a practitioner. If you cling to the three realms, that is not renunciation. If you cling to self-interest, you are not a bodhisattva. If grasping arises, it is not the view. So last night, so thus far we've spoken about the antidotes to the first two of these clings. The first, which is clinging to this life, where one is preoccupied by achieving happiness in this life and overcoming this life's problems. We spoke about the antidotes that need to be cultivated within oneself, namely the reflection on the precious human rebirth that we've attained, something that is so difficult to achieve and is so rare, but has great meaning. And through reflecting effectively on this, one gives rise to the wish to live a meaningful life, to achieve the potential of this human birth. And thereafter one reflects on the impermanence of this situation, the impermanence of this life, the impermanence of the opportunity we've achieved, giving rise to an ever stronger wish to strive for a meaningful goal right now. And then one reflects on the sufferings of the lower realms and the sufferings that potentially await one if at the time of death. And these are the antidotes to turn away from the clinging to this mere life. And then last night we continued to look at the second of the four clingings that needs to be abandoned, and that's clinging to the three realms, or clinging to samsara in its entirety. And here, to turn away from clinging to samsara, one needs to reflect on the suffering nature of samsara. In order to reflect on the suffering nature of samsara, there are different ways that one can approach this. There's an eightfold division, a sixfold division, and the division that is used in the commentary here, that of the threefold division. And these are the suffering of physical and mental pain, the suffering of transient pleasure, and all pervasive suffering. And it's through reflecting on these that one will turn away from clinging to samsara in its entirety. Mm-hmm.
अरे दाद जने इंजांग जो दुंगा सुम्मी संपान देला अन्य किसी ने मार्शिए देले दुंगा दुंगा को दुंगा दुंगा से आये दिंगा सुल्या सोवा दुंगा ओसो चिक नेना से चुंचे ओसो दुंगा सोवा ट्राफ दुंगा उन्हें क्यूसिं बेके सोवा दुंगा दिए दा दुंगा दुंगा से आज करवा दा Ditunga Dungare, Dikising Mashu Saja, Takasang to Shue, the Guy Dunga said Shuvarwa. The Guy Dunga said, Ganese Lamna, Nanzuki, Chitinkita, Delia, Devanyaki, Devatikiri, Penanga Sasiki Deva Sikiritela, Sasiki Devanyaki, Nanzuki, Chikalas and Delanya, Zemotsen, Antik, some Galana Yonata, Nichamim Dronia Galana, and Jeniki, Devadi.
And in the previous weekend, we looked at the first of the three types, the suffering of suffering, or the suffering of mental and physical pain. So this is what we are most familiar with. It's the feeling of suffering. So it can be experienced through in a coarse way, such as physical pain, such as illness, as well as mental anguish, such as anger and jealousy and the like. So this we looked at previously, and last night we looked at the second type, the suffering of change, or the suffering of transient pleasure. So this is, in brief, it's the feeling of happiness, or to express that differently, worldly happiness, or to again express it differently, contaminated happiness. So this contaminated happiness that we experience, this too is suffering. It's the suffering of transient pleasure. So illustrations that are easy to understand: the happiness we experience when we eat a delicious meal, the joy of being with friends or being on holiday, these all are transient happiness, the worldly happiness, contaminated happiness, and this is what is meant by the suffering of transient pleasure. So that we looked at last night.
So this
threefold division of suffering, the second division, suffering of transient pleasure, it's suffering, but from a worldly perspective, this is happiness. This is all the worldly happiness that we experience. So it is happiness, but it's worldly happiness. It's not stable happiness. From a worldly perspective, when we meet a friend and we ask them, how are you? And they ask us how we are, then if we're experiencing some physical pain, we'll say, oh, life is quite difficult, I'm ill. Or if we're experiencing some mental anguish, we say, oh, I'm really worried at the moment. And this is how we talk about suffering. This is what we mean by suffering in the world. So this is the way, from the worldly perspective, that and that alone is suffering. And similarly, in terms of happiness, when we meet a friend and we ask them how they are and they ask us, and we say, oh, I'm great, I'm healthy, and my illness has passed, everything is good. And the friend says, oh, I've been watching the sports, it's fantastic, we won, and everyone's really happy. So from a worldly perspective, this is happiness. And this is the way we talk in the world. This is what we mean by suffering, and this is what we mean by happiness. But from the perspective of a spiritual practitioner, of someone who's striving to live a meaningful life and achieve goals of great value, then what is meant by suffering in the world is certainly is seen as suffering, but at a very coarse level. And worldly happiness too, though, this too is seen as suffering, the suffering of transient pleasure.
Deva 대화 충충 좀 하도요 말해서 대화 충충 제 안 돼서 옆에 남사 교수쇼로 시 동아리게 됐지 나 니네 인자 땜부 매외기 대화들이 했을 때 대화 양다고 말했어 그 동아라고 해야 돼 니래도 나라
It's important that we clear away from a Buddhist a practitioner's perspective. Worldly happiness is to be seen as suffering. And this is because whilst worldly happiness is happiness, one is experiencing the feeling of happiness. So it's suitable to be called happiness. But this happiness is transient. It's not stable. It will change. And because it's not stable and it's transient, it will change. And when it changes, one will experience suffering. One will then again experience the suffering of suffering. So this happiness that we cling to so, it's not stable, it's not lasting, and therefore this is not the happiness worthy of striving for, because it changes and it changes so very swiftly. So this is why, from the perspective of a Buddhist practitioner's view, worldly happiness is not as to be seen as the happiness worthy of striving for, because it's unstable, it doesn't last.
So
this happiness that this worldly happiness that we experience is called, whilst it is happiness, from the perspective of a practitioner, this is called suffering because it's not stable, it doesn't last, and will be followed by the suffering of suffering. And moreover, so that's the first reason. The second reason that it's referred to as suffering is that whilst this is happiness, it is slight happiness. It's not very powerful, and it's, as we've heard, it's not long-lasting. And it's called, and the second reason why it's referred to as suffering is because there's the potential that we'll be deceived by this happiness, in that we'll be satisfied with this mere happiness, believing that worldly happiness is as good as we can experience, and therefore it is worth striving for. So in this way, if we end up being deceived by worldly happiness, this is what we will be satisfied with achieving. Whereas this inner yearning that we have to be freed of suffering and thereby experience lasting, stable happiness, this is what we need to strive for. This is the happiness that is worthy of putting our effort and our energy into. This is the happiness that comes from being liberated from suffering and achieving then happiness that is lasting and stable. So we must be careful not to be deceived by the delights of samsara and thereby being deceived by worldly happiness and be satisfied with that, thinking that this is as good as we can achieve.
That dunga dewa tuyas nyongwa tuya, yang kama khashi chile ya, kama dunga le ya de, nimi chile ya ne, dene kiwa tuya, mungu shuya ba che. Andi membe kita nga zu misi chile samtangwe ne, nga zu mi ne, mi ne kye che, da ma shi padu, ching nga zuke koye dewa ru, mungu nyongwa yor se, ina desu tembu me ware, kasan shi sonba ina, yang nga sonle kiwa ne, kiti ina dunga nyongwa ya chanya che gores. Chisa lhala kye ba ina ya, lhala kye che, kora zu kye ne, ma shi padu, andi ne ke chik, dewa nyongwa ki dewa shuya ba ina, desu dewa tiki tembu yo ma ra, karasa na, ti shi sonne, in ma, ma sonle kiwa ma kye ne, yang dunga nyongwa go, chisa, ti ki dewa che go ma res. Chisa li yungbo, yashin se se, kiwa lenpa ina, kiwa lenche, pe, kor yu tiri, zang ma dan, su su ki tungin cha san yu ba, su su shi u chi, diki yu ba ina ya, dene ya, ten tel ya, kye kyo, chuk kyo, so, su na ma sa ba ina, Mashi Jaya, and Ma, Nasson, the Gayatan, Salami, Jay, Tintinian, Sakyo, the Mikyo, the Gayagi, the Niki Tumayo, Chagores, Chisan, this Timbu, Maresin, Kasan, the Guo to Kitini, Mitemba, Guju, who resetting, the Nikol Yakasan Shiro.
Furthermore, last night, when looking at this, the 17th verse, we spoke about how the happiness that is experienced by beings who've achieved a rebirth in the so-called happy migrations. So ourselves and fellow humans, as well as gods, this happiness that is experienced is unstable. It will change, it changes momentarily, it ceases, and then at the time of death there is a possibility of falling to the lower realms. And if one falls there, one is tormented by incredibly powerful forms of suffering. So this is something that we need to reflect on. And through using mindfulness, looking, being aware of our experiences from day to day, we can see how whenever feelings of happiness arise, they don't last. They come to an end. This happiness changes. It's not stable. It's not lasting. And we can, if we are aware, if we are mindful of our experiences in just a single day, we'll see how many times this happens. We experience some joy, and it ends. Then we experience problems, and then we experience some joy, and that ends. And we experience again suffering. So we can see this on a daily basis, and we need to see this. And likewise in our reflections, we should look back on our life thus far and see that all our moments of great joy and success, this happiness was not stable, it did not last, it ended, and was followed by great difficulties, by further problems. So we need to come to gain clarity of this from our present experience as well as our experience thus far in this life. And then thirdly, we can observe the world around us. And we can imagine the lives of the great and the good, those who seem to have an opulence of success and comfort. And we can be sure that their experience is on a slightly deeper level. It's no different from ours in that all their experiences of pleasure come to an end and are followed by suffering. And then fourthly, we can move that our meditation to the unseen realms, to the God realms. And here we saw about the God Indra, so a God with the most opulent of pleasures. These two are impermanent, these two change. And if, like ourselves, virtue hasn't been accumulated of a similar strength that will lead to a similar rebirth, there is the danger of falling to a lower realm at the time of death, a very real possibility of falling to the lower realms at the time of death. So this is what we looked at last night. And we need to reflect on this in our meditations. The awareness or mindfulness of our day, expand this then in our meditations, reflecting on our life thus far, on those around us, and unseen realms. And see how this happiness that we experience, this pleasure we experience, is not stable. It changes and is followed by suffering.
Na diring ma shue de kasan ge chue de, ang de kasan si tin ma lin ba, ni de mun bo zhuo wa yu, ku luo yu jie chen du jie wa yu, zai de di zhuo kasan, na di ni zi ni de xie sa, na diring tin ma xie de.
So now we come to a new line, and this is the fourth line in the 17th verse. Sun and moon can turn into darkness.
Ah, 문바스 너무 차요. 그래서 와다 니멀야 외시우요레스. 아니 한 나와레 외시우요 유라다디네. 안데 너무 차요. 그래서 그때 오늘 다디네 여르베스.
So this is no big surprise. We know the sun sets and there's no sunlight. The moon sets, there's no moonlight. So on the surface, it seems quite clear. Usually when we talk about the sun and the moon, we think about these two orbs in the sky. But here it refers to gods who have the name. One who has the name sun, another that has the name moon.
In
some texts, the sun and the moon are actually the celestial bodies of the physical sun and the physical moon, but they are abodes populated by gods. And those gods that live on the sun are gods of the sun, and those gods that live on the moon are called gods of the moon. So this is how some texts will refer to the sun and the moon, which is similar to saying the continent of Australia is populated by Australians. So the concept is similar to that.
The
meaning here, though, is the sun and the moon refer to gods, or literally children of gods. So sentient beings. So they are said to reside on the sun and on the moon, and so these sentient beings that are gods, they always their abode is always in light, because whilst for us the sun sets and the moon rises, for them, because they are said to live on the sun and the moon, this of course is never the case. So they always experience the light of the moon or the light of the sun, but moreover, their own bodies emanate light. So therefore, they are always surrounded by light from the environment and from themselves. And these particular children of gods, they experience great mental joy. So they experience a tremendous amount of pleasure and joy. And their environment is magnificent in a way that we cannot even comprehend. So this is the literal meaning of sun and moon here. But the meaning that we are to take from this is that all such happiness that is, all happiness that is achieved comes about in dependence on the accumulation of virtue. And when that virtue is exhausted, it is finished. And in that period, whilst one is experiencing the pleasurable results of virtue, if one doesn't accumulate at least a merit or virtue of a similar strength, then when the virtue that one is experiencing is exhausted, there will be no similar virtue to replace that. And that means that one will take rebirth in a realm of far greater suffering, a lower realm than one is in. And this is because the merit that has led to all this happiness and pleasure of a good rebirth has been exhausted. So literally in the case of the children of the gods, the sun and the moon gods, when they die and if they fall to the lower realms, they achieve a body of whether it's a human or an animal or a spirit or a hell being, their body no longer emits light, and therefore they their bodies have turned into one of darkness. So that again is a literal meaning here. But the actual intended meaning is that happiness is unstable. Worldly happiness is transient, and worldly happiness is unstable. And whilst one has it, it's imperative not to be deceived by it, but rather to use this opportunity to accumulate virtue.
That is all.
The sun and the moon, the gods of the sun and the moon, these children of the gods, these are gods of the desire realm. We should, so whilst we have here sun and moon, so this is singular, we should understand that as these are children of gods, then they are many, there's a multitude, so we should understand that these are sentient beings, and they are in the plural, not singular. And so amongst these gods of the sun and gods of the moon, there's quite some variety. So there are amongst them some who are Dharma practitioners, who have an interest in the Dharma. And at the time of Buddha Shakyamuni, these gods of the sun and of the moon, there were some who asked the Buddha questions. And the Buddha's response comprised sutras. So there's the sutra of the sun, there's a sutra of the moon, there's also a sutra of the stars. So these were all answers given by the Buddha to questions from these gods. So therefore we should understand sun and moon as plural. There are many differing gods there, some of whom have an interest in the Dharma.
Kolo yuwe kyebo, digi pa, ne, jendu kyebo yuwe se, yogol kyebo yuwe se, kolo yuwe kyebo sen, da zemli yonzo ge, wandu tuyde kyebo chaya na, zemli ma se, ne, li, li, la, 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 dini ki, la, li ya, mambu yorwa, on dini ki, shi, wandu tuyde kyebo chasang, zembu lingi mi yonzo da, ne, la, la, soba, dini ki, wandu tuyde kyebo chaya, dini kyebo digi, ne, pe, wangang, chenpo, da, top chenpo, Beijing, Yanje Tedelia, Kijo Sabas, Masavan, Tisutinki Tiwa Mares, Sina Dinida, Mahine, Anton, and Pajo, Jimmy Yogia, Mida, and me Yoporo, and I am Lee Yoporo, the Nigger Simjan Dudu, Yeje, me Yoku, the Nigger Lakoya, then me and me Yoku, Begana, Dinella Giva Yores, Chesan, the Niggi.
Now looking at the first line in the 18th verse, the universal monarch can be reborn as a servant. So a universal monarch, or often translated as a wheel-turning king, is a sentient being with inconceivable power over as a king of gods as well as humans, and having such power, such inconceivable power, of course he has incredible wealth and resources, and therefore experiences tremendous happiness. But even such a king can be reborn as a servant. So the meaning of this line then is similar to what we've covered thus far, that the incomparable happiness that can be experienced among sentient beings, this only comes about in dependence on causes that have been accumulated in previous lives. And as these causes are impermanent and those causes have now ripened into results, those results will change momentarily and will end. Therefore, this happiness that is being experienced, even such great happiness that appears to be long-lasting, is unstable. It's transient. And at the time of death, if similar causes haven't been accumulated, a very different result will be achieved, will follow. As we can see here, someone with such great power can end up as a servant, a being with no power. So the meaning is to not be deceived by the happiness and the delights of samsara. Do not see this as complete and perfect happiness, happiness that is worthy of striving for. This happiness is unstable, it's transient, it will end and it will be followed by suffering. There are many stories about these wheel-turning kings. But I imagine that these haven't come across to Australian culture. But whether historians agree with this, I don't really know. So the stories that we know from the sutras, perhaps you can relate to in the sense that this is a being who had great power and influence and used it with military might to conquer ever more lands, to the point where it was said that he controlled the whole world. And then maybe you could say drunk with power at being the ruler of the world, he then even fought with the gods and beat the gods, and therefore became the ruler of humans and gods. And so there are stories that this has happened in the past, and that these kind of rulers will come again in the future.
Yeah.
Continuing in the 18th verse, these can be known by means of scripture, but cannot be perceived by ordinary beings. So these illustrations that we've had in the preceding few lines, such as about the god Indra and the gods of the sun and the moon, as well as about the universal monarch, these are difficult for ordinary beings to realize ourselves. So really, for us, the only way that we can relate to it is through having our trust in the sutras, trust in the Buddha and the teachings of the Buddha. Because it is difficult for us to perceive these things, and therefore to know from experience that such beings exist in these fabulous circumstances as has been described.
Mm.
So whether these stories that we read about are literally true or not, well, we can't say with any certainty. But perhaps a more skillful way to relate to them is to look at the meaning and see how that perhaps relates to the history that we do have trust and conviction in. So if we think about the British Empire, the British Empire ruled, I think it's like a quarter of the world. So they, at the height of the power of the British Empire, it could be said that the British Empire fulfilled the role of a wheel-turning king, in that it had so much power over the world. But look what happened. After not that long, really within a century, that power waned and was lost. And the place that the UK is in now, compared to it was 120 years ago, is completely different. And if we think further back in history to the kingdoms in Rome and Greece, we can imagine that it being felt there that the world was ruled by these people. And there were many other kingdoms in Asia as well, that where it would have been believed that the world was being ruled by this nation. But that too changed, and those powerful nations of those nations with really inconceivable power, that was lost. So in this way, we can come to understand these analogies better. So whilst we can only really relate, whilst we have no direct experience of these stories in the sutras, we can relate to them through our trust in the Buddha, as well as to looking at the meaning and seeing how that does exist in our understanding of world history. Because the key point to these examples from history is at the time, those people would have felt that situation of power and influence was going to last, that the sun wouldn't set on those empires, but it always did. So therefore, not to be deceived by worldly happiness. And this is the meaning of those stories. So in this way, we can have some experience of what's recounted in the stories. So then, beyond relating to them through our trust in the scriptures and the Buddha, how can we relate to them? And here we continue in the text. Therefore, observe your own experience of human level changes. A rich man turns into a poor man. A confident man changes into an anxious one. Many people unite together as one. The list of such phenomenon is inconceivable.
Rana rana mi yuwa tuye se, nga tuye ton tuye, nga tuye agwa tuye mi, nga tuye jihab chik na inata, zambali na le inata, mi yuwa kanis chukuyo me de, nga tuye ya tuye da, tele jeba che shio aswa, tuye da aswa, rana mi yuwa tuye se.
Therefore, observe your own experience of human level changes. So this is important when we engage in analytical meditation. We need to use our own experience as well as what we observe. And in this way we can understand the transient nature of worldly happiness. So we've seen in our own lifetimes, and we know from history, how the mighty fall. And we see this through empires, through nation states, and even individuals with great power, but in their own lifetime, that is lost. And perhaps on the same or lesser scales with ourselves, we also have experience of this. So it's important in our analytical meditation to relate to the topics personally through our own individual experience as well as what we ourselves observe.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 19th verse, a rich man turns into a poor man. So here again, we utilize our own experience, either personal or what we observe, to turn the theory to turn our knowledge of the Dharma from theory into something experiential. So we will have observed how those who are incredibly wealthy, who want for nothing materially and have the best of everything, we can perceive that they probably experience a lot of worldly happiness. They wear the comfortable clothes, have a very comfortable living environment, delicious food. But whilst experiencing all that happiness, it is not stable. Not only do they experience problems whilst wealthy, but that wealth can be lost. And we have observed this in the world, that when there's been a complete turnaround in a individual or family's financial situation, they can end up destitute. So this happens fairly often on to various levels. And the meaning here is that happiness, worldly happiness, is unstable. It's unreliable. It's not something we should allow ourselves to be deceived by. So this is the meaning here, and we can relate this through our individual experience and what we observe.
A
confident man changes into an anxious one. So here we can understand confidence as someone with great power and a reputation that means people respect them and listen to what they say. They enter a room and people are captivated by them and pay great heed to what they have to say. So therefore, people with great influence in our world. And we know people either who have this through mere fame or through the political sphere or business. And so whilst they have all this power and influence, then this will produce some happiness in their lives. But this happiness, this status, it is not stable. And we have illustrations that we've observed where the situation of power and influence is lost. And perhaps they end up convicted for corruption or other crimes and end up in jail where they have no influence anymore. Or they fall from grace and are humiliated, have no power and influence, and people shun them. They certainly do not want to hear what they have to say. So again, we have illustrations that we've observed how worldly power, prestige, happiness is not stable. It does not last. And third line, many people unite together as one. So maybe before I translate what Genda said, it's perhaps useful to say that as with the previous line, and this one, Tibetan to English can often be a bit ambiguous, or we don't have words that specifically match. So therefore, it's often the commentary doesn't match what we have in English. So now will be another illustration of that. But it also doesn't mean that what the translator, that what he translated is mistaken, because it can be read in different ways. So now again, this commentary on the third line. So though, again, people with power and influence, like we saw in the previous line, they will be surrounded by people who serve them, employees or servants, as well as have we'd say many hangers-on, as well as friends. So they're surrounded by a retinue. There are always people who want to hear what they say, praise them. You know, the situation that people with power and influence find themselves in. And this leads them to the rise of worldly happiness. But again, this is not stable. It doesn't last. And we can see this in the world, that people's situations change. That as someone's power and influence wanes, then those who surround them, either their employees, they no longer can employ as many people, they no longer can need so many servants, and then they start to lose the influence and the prestige that came with having so many people working for them, for example. And likewise, if their situation changes, it becomes clear amongst their vast array of friends, their very thick address book, how few of those people actually cared for them and were real friends, and how many of them just disappear. And this then leads to tremendous suffering, realizing that one was deceived. This loss of power, this loss of influence, and the loss of the effects of that, such as having many employees and friends, this leads to great suffering. So here again we see how happiness, worldly happiness, is unstable, unreliable. And the experience that I'm sure that we all have here is that friendships that were once incredibly valuable to us, people that we were very emotionally close to, those friendships come to an end. And we end up either having a very negative relationship, or we just lose contact. So too, that happiness that we've experienced in our relationships with others, this is not stable, it ends.
Where
we can see illustrations of this third line, many people unite together as one, is if you imagine the situation of a politician, especially a politician with great power, a cabinet minister or a prime minister. Whilst they are in office, they are surrounded by people who want to hear what they say, who react to what they have to say. Wherever they go, people pay attention to them. They walk into a room, everyone looks, everyone listens. Then they lose an election. Their situation changes overnight. If they were in government official accommodation, they're booted out immediately. Wherever they go, people will still recognize them, but they may snicker behind their back, they may at their loss of power and influence. What they have to say, maybe some people will want to hear, but people won't pay much attention, and certainly will not, they won't have much influence anymore. So with the loss of this power and prestige comes great suffering. The purpose of what they were trying to, of their life, will seem lost. And this is the case, we can understand, I think, quite easily in terms of politicians, but it will be certainly the case in others in business. And where we perhaps can have other experience, or we have observed, is when someone is, for example, in a loving relationship, and they have many children, and a happy, loving family. So they're experiencing happiness in this situation. But as the years pass and children grow up and they leave the home, maybe they leave the city, maybe they leave the country, and the family then gets dispersed through both movement and then through death. And then this happy, loving situation that one has quite quickly changes. And one can end up alone with nothing but one's memories, with one's loved ones, not around oneself now when one is in need, needing to be looked after and cared for. And all that one has left is long-distance correspondence and memories. So in this way we can come to understand how worldly happiness is transient, it doesn't last, and is followed by suffering.
And tell us about Sammy Chapson. Then he did that, you know, Mamuyo Res, Mamuyo Res, and the million, and then they're not conscious of you, but then he chick Mamuyo Res, you are here. That he may be Dundula or what down as a penny Sangerochina, and Bokron, Chick Supotana, Yudicabla, Chick Pes, Chiche, and it's Jim Chasa, Coronia, Chiche, Jerry, and so on, and the Corongi, Sulina, Shena, Meva, Chick Coronti.
The fourth line, this list of such phenomenon is inconceivable. So this alludes to that we need to reflect on this extensively from our individual experience as well as from what we observe. And we need in this inconceivable list, we need to go certainly look at human experience, but also the experience of beings in other realms. So for example, we think of in the realm of animals, if we think of a lion, the king of the jungle, clearly a being that walks with great confidence and strength and power, and others fear the lion. And we think of the lion that's a leader of a particular pack, that is an animal with tremendous prestige and power and influence in that pack. But that too, that situation of power, whilst will be seeming almost permanent to that lion, this will change. It can change from when they age and their power weakens and they get surpassed by a younger male. And then they lose a combat and they leave wounded. Tremendous suffering will follow. Or their situation can change from something quite innocuous, like an insect bite, and from that an illness arises and they die. So all these situations of worldly pleasure do not last. They change, and they change quickly. It's the case for humans, it's the case for animals, it's the case for gods and all beings. So when we approach this meditation, we should utilize our individual experience as well as what we perceive in the human world. So this is of great importance. And then we take it further to also unseen beings such as gods. So those such as, for example, the desire realm gods, they have comforts that are inconceivable to what draws us so, attracts us so. They have lives which are far longer than humans. Their lives in human years are said to last thousands of years. Moreover, they have an abundance of resources that are inconceivable to a human being, and thereby experience tremendous pleasures. But all of this ends. all of this ends. And it said that as the time of death of a god approaches, then they experience in the final stage of their life tremendous suffering, suffering that surpasses in the impact on the being, the great pleasure that they've experienced for these thousands of human years. That great pleasure is surpassed by the tremendous suffering that they experience as their death approaches. Den kommt der Konzo Dugnil Mananga Ashikosong, Konzo He, Konzo Den.
Den Lea Midiwa Kya Chiche, Medo Ge Changwa Dige, Medo Kole, Medo Da Changwa Ningba Chaya Chiche, Kwe Dulo Dige, Dokwa Chaya Chiche, Den Lu Lea Nguna Da Dima Khaya Da Dine Chiche, O Dese O Dulo.
As the time of death approaches for gods, then they experience tremendous suffering, and it's specified five types of suffering that desire realm gods experience. So they've lived for thousands of human years experiencing pleasure upon pleasure. Suddenly their situation changes, and this change of their situation, whilst to us would seem either a bit fantastical, some of it, and others would seem to us ordinary, for them it's the first time they're experiencing it. And therefore they experience tremendous mental anguish. So the light has radiated from their body, their entire lives of light has radiated from their bodies. That fades and extinguishes. And this causes tremendous mental anguish because they understand what this means. Secondly, their home environment becomes uncomfortable. It's said that the seat that they sit on becomes uncomfortable. But what that means is for the first time they're experiencing physical discomfort. This is a new sensation for them. Moreover, their home now starts to become dirty. And this too, they've never experienced this for themselves. And they understand the meaning of these signs. And thirdly, the flower garlands that ornament them, these start to age. Their body starts to sweat and smell, and their clothes, their radiant clothes, also start to age. So these, whilst to us would seem quite ordinary, these are experiences they've never had, and they know only come at the time of death, and therefore tremendous suffering arises for them. And the meaning then of this, the purpose of us reflecting on this, is to remind ourselves that no matter how great the happiness that is, that can be experienced, as long as that happiness is contaminated, as long as the being remains bound within samsara, that happiness is not stable, it doesn't last. And as the time of death approaches, and they're surrounded by the signs of their impending death, they have clairvoyance as to where their next rebirth will come. And for most of them, having spent a lifetime of being deceived by joy, they haven't accumulated the causes for a good rebirth, and they, with their clairvoyance, they can tell where their future rebirth will be. So the purpose for this reflection on the suffering of transient pleasure is to completely transform our perspective, to lead us to examine and reevaluate our priorities. So this will come about through an honest reflection on the happiness that we desire and we crave and we strive for. We need to recognize what we know already from our own experience, our personal experience and our observed experience, that every happy state that we have experienced and others are experiencing is unstable, and it will change, and it will be followed by further misery, further suffering. And we need to understand this not just on an intellectual level, but on an experiential level, a level that does transform our way of thinking, transform our values, our priorities. We need to go through these reflections repeatedly over a sustained period, understanding that no matter what happiness can be experienced in the human world or even in the unseen worlds beyond, in the God realms, that happiness is unstable, it's unchanging. And we need to see that this happiness, whatever happiness we can potentially experience within samsara, within the stream of rebirths that have passed and will pass, this transitory happiness on its own has no value. And through reflecting like this, we start to change our perspective, start to see that to spend our life striving for momentary pleasures, this is not living a life of meaning. So this way we come to see that all the time and energy and the worry and anguish that's put in towards achieving momentary happiness is really not worthwhile. Rather, to fulfill this longing that we have for happiness, the happiness that we need to strive for is that the happiness that is beyond samsara, because that happiness is unchanging, that is lasting, that is stable. And that is, and that, so first we need to turn away through recognizing with our intellect that transitory worldly happiness is not worthy of striving for, and through this understanding overcome the deceptive nature of worldly happiness. And then secondly, see that there is something better to strive for, a happiness that is lasting and stable, and that alone is worthy of striving for. In this is the reflection on the suffering of transient pleasure. We need to come to the conclusions that transient pleasure is unstable, it's deceptive, and therefore it's not worthy of striving for. Rather, we should strive for lasting, stable happiness. In addition then to those two conclusions, we need to be very clear that the temporary happiness of humans and gods, we do have a need for this. Because if we are overwhelmed by suffering, it is very different, if not impossible, to strive for lasting, stable happiness. So we need to be skillful and accumulate the causes that lead to transient happiness, happiness of humans and gods, but accumulate those causes with our objective clear. The objective is to achieve lasting happiness, stable happiness. But in order to be able to continue our spiritual development, we need to achieve the results which are worldly happiness or transient happiness, so as to be able to continue to strive for and achieve our objective. But throughout this whole process of accumulating both causes as well as of experiencing results of transient happiness, to not be deceived by this. Do not think that this is the goal worthy of striving for, but rather to use the situation to accumulate the causes that will result in lasting, stable happiness. So in this way, we use our intelligence to accumulate the causes for transient happiness in order to be able to continue our spiritual development and achieve lasting happiness.
Kala,
And similarly, when we encounter others who are experiencing tremendous overt suffering, then whilst this is of course suffering relating just to this one life, we should still help them. We shouldn't say, oh, this isn't the main thing. The main thing is driving for liberation. So therefore, the suffering that you experience is of no importance. When people are impoverished and that they're struggling to feed themselves and their family, or they have insufficient material resources to care for themselves and their family, with such problems, those problems will obsess them, will dominate their mind, and they'll put all their time and energy into trying to stay alive. So they will have no opportunity. They will have no opportunity to engage in spiritual development, and moreover, in order to overcome these very overt problems, they may well engage in negativity. For example, stealing food so that they can feed themselves and their family. So therefore we should help people who are suffering in this way. Because if we are able to help them sufficiently so that they can overcome these very coarse worldly problems, then on one hand they are hopefully not likely to engage in non-virtuous behavior, and at least then they have the space, the mental space, and perhaps the opportunity to accumulate virtue, to accumulate the causes that will lead to happiness. So therefore, we need to use whatever comforts that we have in samsara in a skillful way to ensure that we continue our spiritual progression and to be of benefit to others. So we've spoken a lot then about worldly happiness or the suffering of transient pleasure. And we've mentioned again now, as I did last night, how to use this skillfully. So how does one go about achieving worldly happiness? One needs to accumulate the specific causes. But to put this in brief, to achieve worldly happiness, as well as transient happiness, both transient pleasure as well as the happiness of liberation, the only way to achieve this is to change our way of thinking. Mental transformation. In other words, one needs to engage in meditation based on knowledge. Other than this, there is no way to achieve liberation. So in terms of achieving the causes that lead to worldly happiness, so this we've mentioned in the past many times, one needs to develop the ethical conduct, the mind of restraint, that restrains our mind, keeps our mind ethical, and thereby our physical and verbal behavior as ethical. And these need to be conjoined with the minds of generosity and patience in order to achieve causes for worldly happiness, good rebirths. But to achieve the goal of greater meaning, the goal of lasting stable happiness, these four causes are no longer seen as primary causes but branches. And the primary causes become the development of single-pointed concentration, the mind of calm abiding, as well as the wisdom realizing emptiness. So these two, concentration and wisdom, are the primary causes for liberation. But in order to develop concentration and wisdom, they need to be supported by the practices of generosity, ethics, and patience. And as one develops, in particular, this mind of wisdom, one's afflictions proportionately weaken. And as one experiences both a strengthening of one's wisdom, understanding reality, and thereby the weakening of strength of the afflictions, we can start to see how our way of thinking is being transformed and our way of reacting to situations is being transformed. And this gives us the conviction that liberation is approaching, because the mind that is liberated from suffering, we are approaching the attainment of that mind. But in order to give rise to the particular practices that lead to liberation, practices of the development of the mind of single point and concentration, as well as the mind that is the wisdom realizing emptiness, one has to have particularly strong conviction to achieve these minds, a strong aspiration to achieve liberation. Without this overwhelming aspiration to achieve liberation, one's efforts to develop concentration and wisdom will be insufficient. In order to give rise to the aspiration, this strong, overwhelming aspiration, one needs these bronze practices of ethics, generosity, and patience, as well as repeated reflection on the sufferings of samsara, as has been presented here. And when one has done these reflections in a way that has transformed one's way of thinking, one will have an understanding that if we don't utilize this opportunity that we've achieved that has come with this precious life, we may well not get such a good opportunity again. Well, to put that in brief, if we don't use it now, then when will we? There will not be a better opportunity than what we have now. So therefore, we need to engage in these meditations as has been outlined thus far.
Dele rayon de, en dele yancik lüle dimpi devaçlı yoruva. 내가 되니게 안 되심보 되니게 룰에 된비게 룰이 왕셔에 된비게 망체 되는지 와다 변이 변조서 걸유 되니게 잘 들어와 다음 하나 둘에 nga dule dewa yong de ga lu shi le tin bi dewa de mang che de da da nga ju gi dewa de sem le tin bi sem nya gom che ti ye de gom nyam len che sem gi thone gom che ne dewa nya de nga su pe nyu ar wo ro che da nga de ne za dewa dewa ni di ga ro so lu le tin bi dewa di dewa de nyu ba chung wa che ge sem le tin bi dewa de shu che che go re che za da nga ju gi
So we currently find ourselves deceived by desire for worldly happiness. And as we've been hearing, the worldly happiness is what is meant by the suffering of transient pleasure. So this we seek out, we long for in many different forms. For example, the joy that we experience when we in a pleasing company, when people are speaking pleasantly to us or about us, they're praising us. We desire the pleasure that comes from delicious food, from new possessions such as lovely clothing, and even from something as innocuous as pleasant smells, as the fragrance of flowers. So all these forms of happiness we desire and we seek out. The difficulty that we have is a far more powerful happiness, the happiness that comes with a mind of single-pointed concentration, a mind of calm abiding. This is something that we don't have experience of in this life, and in past lives we likely not to have limited experience of. So amongst the various types of happiness, the happiness that comes through physical pleasure and the happiness that comes for mental pleasure, of the two, the stronger is that of mental happiness. The practitioner who's striving with sincerity to achieve liberation, they will therefore be engaging in the primary practices of developing concentration and wisdom. And when this is achieved, when they achieve single point of concentration and developing the wisdom, realizing emptiness, and have achieved a mental path, an actual path of the Buddha Dharma, then this happiness that comes with concentration, that is a mental path, this happiness is not the suffering of transient pleasure, because they are striving to overcome completely samsara and achieve the state of liberation. Therefore, the happiness that is, or the bliss, it's usually translated as the bliss, that is attained when one has concentration and a mental path and is striving for liberation, as one develops, this only increases in strength. And that as the attainment of liberation approaches, the bliss that one is experiencing, or the happiness, the pleasure one is experiencing from this powerful concentration, only ever grows. And therefore, this bliss is not the suffering of change or the suffering of transient pleasure. So to summarize what we've looked at last night and this morning, is that in order to live a life of great meaning, to fulfill the potential of this human rebirth, we need to, with honesty, investigate the situation of a human rebirth, of the experiences of humans and of gods. In particular here, to see that even the desirable experiences of humans and gods, these are actually not worthy of us striving for. That to live, to fulfill the potential of this life, if our mind stays dominated by fulfilling the desires and the pleasures of this life, this actually is not a meaningful life, it's a waste. And we come to understand this through seeing that all the pleasures and desires of that we can potentially experience in this life and others do experience are unstable, they do not last, and they are followed by suffering, and therefore are not worthy of being the primary objective of our endeavors. And moreover, that this experience of pleasure is deceptive, and it leads us to our confusion, thinking that the achievement of worldly pleasures is all that we are capable of achieving, and keeps our true potential obscured, hidden from us. And secondly, our meditation needs to progress to the understanding that there is something far greater than what we can, that is otherwise to be experienced as an ordinary samsaric being, and that is the lasting stable happiness of liberation, the actual state of happiness that we long for, a happiness that is never punctuated by even the slightest unpleasant circumstance. And in this way, we give rise to a strong desire for liberation from samsara, a wish to definitely emerge from samsara and achieve the state of freedom. And when, and when this aspiration arises within us in sufficient strength, or for this aspiration to arise in us in sufficient strength, requires this meditation to be done repeatedly over a sustained period. And then when it does, we will have the strength of mind to apply ourselves to the primary causes of the cultivation of single-pointed concentration and the wisdom analyzing reality, the wisdom that it realizes emptiness. And these two practices, supported by the branches of ethics, generosity, and patience. So this will come about when we see that there is something far better that we have the potential to achieve. And we lift this veil of obscuration, believing that worldly happiness, this, the achievement of that, is our potential. And rather, we come to a far clearer meaning of what a meaningful life is and how to achieve it. This afternoon we'll continue then from the next verse, and we'll come to the third of the three types of suffering, the all-pervasive suffering. So this time, if you have more questions, then please feel free to ask. Start with Andy. Attachment for that bliss.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So, is it correct to say that when one has achieved the bliss that comes with concentration, but is yet to realize emptiness, one will still be attached to that bliss,
yeah.
And also that bliss is impermanent. So, therefore,
I wanted to check that bliss is impermanent.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So, therefore, is it not transient? The suffering of transient happiness. Because it's impermanent and therefore can end. Yeah? Okay. Then shine drupi ki dewa yurken tongi mato ken kong datung shine drupi ki dewa dela dejak yare de gamla shine ki dewa de yang mitakpare jetan de agiwe dugnil re Marebe.
Lam Mogombachi.
Consider it up, you need a company at Topasa.
No, my mother, in it, Lam Mogombachi, Lamgi, Tava Duni, Samba Mevache, and they call Chicken Senior to be to win a Suskiawatim, Halia, something senior to Vaina, the Ni senior to be Tewad, you do it, Mida was the Kimar, you do it, a person, Halike Vaina, Yan, Tir Yam Chenma, and Dubal Machia, Taduma.
Then the Sapokoso, Yine Shine Drupkente, Kong Tompeni Tokmason, Yine Kong Tarpa Topiki Durpa Yurken, Dene Dewa De, Gue Dugnel Seki Mare. Karakase Kong
Tarpa Dunyagi Sambio Kuni Lanche, Shine Drupena, Denegi Shine Drupenchila, Shine Tobas or Matobas or.
Shine Topkine.
Denegi Shine Topkala Taba Duny Sambu Kuni Lanchi Shine Topne Denegi Diawatela Tapashi Nguyuma Chagmare.
Okay. So a person who's achieved calm abiding, but their motivation is for calm abiding, mere calm abiding. So then they want to have good rebirths. Under the influence of calm abiding. So this is there's no thought of liberation or needing to realize emptiness. So that bliss would be called the suffering of transient pleasure. But a person who has achieved calm abiding with the motivation of achieving liberation will know they need to realize emptiness. And they will be striving to realize emptiness, although they have not yet. So their bliss, whilst of course it's impermanent, would not be called suffering because of the strength of their aspiration to achieve liberation. So they have this powerful determination for liberation, and with under that influence, they've realized calm abiding, and will apply that to the development of wisdom. So that person then, it's not called transient suffering. Okay. Okay.